mask wearing, movie theaters closed, bars closed. How do you go on a first date during a pandemic? That can be really tough. Also, navigating the waters of online dating. That can be tough as well. Today, we learn more about pandemic dating and online dating. All right, so today on Learning More, we are talking about dating during a pandemic. How does that work? You know, you've got a shelter in place where you're supposed to stay home with just the people you live with. If you live by yourself, well, what are you going to do? Right? You got to stay 6 feet away from people. You can't go to bars, clubs, restaurants, anything like that. Like none of that. Even if you do get a date, where are you going to go? Like what? How do you handle this in this unique situation? And well, you know what? I can't help you. I'm no dating expert, but I've got somebody on the line with me here. Ricky Thompson, an associate professor of digital rhetoric and writing studies at the University of Washington. Ricky, you're doing a lot of research on dating and specifically online dating experiences. Can you tell us a little about that research?
Sure. Thanks for having me. Well, it started a few years ago when I was online dating and I was starting to get fascinated with, how do people set up a profile? Like, what's the right kind of thing to do? And then I found myself talking to friends about their profiles and comparing. And at one point, one of my friends said, are you doing research on this? Because you probably should. Like, I would pay you for helping me with my profile. So, yeah, and it kind of was a no-brainer at that point. I'm like, yeah, why am I not doing research on this? I study how people present themselves in online spaces, how people use the internet to find connection. I'd looked at blogging. I'd looked at mental health. It was a pretty natural progression. And so there I was. And, you know, a few years later now, I've interviewed over 115 people for my book project. And then the pandemic happened. I was actually supposed to stop interviewing people last January. I was right at 100 people, and that was my goal. And then I thought there was no way I could avoid looking at the pandemic. I had to keep collecting data because figured this might be
changes everything.
I'm like, how can I not? Like, my book will be completely useless and out of date. And so I sent out a call, you know, to the people who were in my study to say, hey, what's going on? And so about another 40 people that were in my study have kept in touch with me, and I send quarterly check-ins, and I hear from, you know, groups of people at different times and where they're at. So I've continued to study the pandemic dating and picked up a few more people in the study along the way.
Okay.
But I'm kind of hoping that this may be the last call for the pandemic dating. I mean, we're not really out of it. I don't know. But some stuff is the same and some stuff has changed quite a bit.
What has the pandemic done to the world of dating?
Well, as you pointed out, people can't go anywhere. So
right.
I think the first thing that changed is that for the first time, online dating actually became online dating and not just a matchmaking service. Mm-hmm. People actually started using the apps as a place to really get to know each other for longer periods of time. They were isolated. They couldn't go out. So a number of apps started adding video chat options within the app. Some already had them, like Bumble already had it as a feature. But people started using those types of features. People started having dates on Zoom. You know, I've been to a Zoom wedding. I don't know about you, but people were living life online. And so a lot of their dating life was happening online. And people were still actually getting to see each other. People started pretty early making decisions about how were they going to meet in person, because they weren't willing to say, we're just going to stay online for a year. At the beginning of the pandemic, I think right around May or June, I started seeing a lot more evidence that people were doing all their first dates at the park, you know, going for a walk. Which the other thing that came out of pandemic dating is dating was not happening at places where people just sat down and drank and ate and got fat. You know, instead they actually went out right. and they were physical. I had a person in my study said, this pandemic has to end because I can't keep going out and hiking for dates. Like, I can't handle this. Like, I'm a drink.
I'm getting too much exercise.
Yeah, like, this exercise dating is killing me. But it became active in a weird way. Weird for
some. Yeah. Well, you know, That's gotta be a weird thing, because you sort of have like, okay, so, you know, you go see a concert with somebody, you've got the music as the distraction. If things aren't quite working out, you have the other thing. Oh, well, I'm just going to eat. Yeah. You know, hey, we're not having good conversation, so I'm going to order more food or whatever it is, or I'm going to ask for the check. If you're on a hike, you're sort of, you're in there. It's happening until you got to do the whole loop.
Yeah, I think for good or for bad, I think a lot of people learned rather quickly, oh yeah, this isn't going to go somewhere. Where I think when they were kind of going out and, you know, meeting at the bar and whatever, they may have been distracted. I mean, people still had a sense if they wanted to go out with somebody mm-hmm. again after the first date. But I think the other thing is more people were just taking a little bit, they were taking longer before they were willing to meet. So I think they were making their decisions a little bit more carefully. Not everybody. There's plenty of people who were like, still, hey, you know, let's just go fool around and hook up. But what I did hear from some people in my study was, for people who were really looking for serious relationships, right? They were looking for, you know, they weren't just looking to hook up. They actually found that the pandemic made it more clear who that was, because they no longer had people who were acting like they were interested in something serious and then really, you know, took them to dinner, you know, went to dinner together and they realized they didn't want something serious. The conversation that would happen before online during the pandemic brought up whether or not somebody wanted to talk. Like, one gal said, like, well, if you're not willing to chat for a while or do a video date, you know, and she had a number of people who said, yeah, I'm not interested in chatting online. I just want to get together. So she's like, well, you're off the list. And the thing she had said is, before the pandemic, she wouldn't have known that, because she would have been willing to meet more quickly. And so it kind of weeded people out as far as clarifying people's intentions. And for people who were just looking to hook up, they were clear. And other people were like, sure, let's hook up, you know, but they knew they were on the same page. So it kind of clarified people's expectations a little bit more.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. Well, you know, and it makes it, I mean, okay, so, you know, I've been married for a long time. I have never done the online dating thing. It was always, I met people somewhere, and I guess very inappropriately, I met my wife at work. That doesn't really, or that shouldn't happen anymore, I guess.
I know plenty of people, it still happens.
Okay. But yeah, you know, so it's like the online dating thing is just this kind of strange, different world for me, because I've never been in it. So when you go to a place, you've got kind of this common ground where, okay, well, you know, I went to, let's say, you know, you go to a country mm-hmm. bar. Well, most likely the other people there are going to like country mm-hmm. music. Well, now you're on this app. And so in this kind of polarized world, how do you judge if this person even has the same, like, you know, beliefs as you? How do you judge that this is a person that you would even want to swipe right or swipe left on?
That is a great question. First, let me start with the country bar. So you're at the country bar together. And I do like to compare apps, by the way, to different bars. When you go to the country bar and the person likes the same music, really, that's the one thing you know you have in common, probably. Like, you don't necessarily know how much other stuff you have in common. You're going to find that out as you start talking, right? So with online dating apps, what happens is, one, you're not in the country bar, but if you are on some of the apps that let you link your Spotify account, you can pretty quickly find out if you're both listening to country music together. Depending on the app, you have a certain amount of space to write. If you're on apps like Tinder or Bumble or Hinge, there's small amounts of space, like 150 kind of words. But if you're on apps that were traditionally more desktop apps like OkCupid or Match.com or eHarmony, they have more space for you to fill out on your profile. And they also will often have prompts. So it is not uncommon to see on people's written profile comments about their musical taste, for example, right? That may be one thing. Many of the apps have check boxes that you can fill out about kind of, do you go to the gym? How often? Do you smoke? Do you do drugs? What's your astrological sign? Do you want kids? What are your political beliefs? Like, are you liberal or conservative? So these are some ways. Religion, this is one way that you start finding out what you have in common is by these drop-down buttons, right? These filters, and they show up on your profile pretty quickly. One of the things, though, that I'm seeing is that with the very polarized space that we're in, I think politically in this country, what's also happening is people are attaching ideas about beliefs to things that are not necessarily about the checkbox, whether they filled out liberal or conservative. So people are making decisions about people's politics based on like visual images or comments in people's profiles. So one may be like clothing items like MAGA hats or shirts. I had somebody comment that somebody had an American flag hanging in their bedroom in a picture, and they were like, clearly they're a conservative and I'm not. I haven't heard as many people who are conservative commenting on things that they're looking for to help them figure out if somebody's liberal. It seems to be more liberal people are looking for examples of conservatism. So that's kind of interesting. They're attaching it to, oh, they have a hunting picture. They must be conservative, which these are not necessarily always true, right? So, but people are making decisions really, and they're making quick decisions, right? They're swiping quickly and they're often swiping through photos first. Not everybody's good about reading the profile. Some people don't write very much in the profile. If you're on Tinder, for example, there's not a lot of room on the profile.
Well, you know, what that makes me think of is I saw someone in a break room at a job, and I saw them, you know, as I was getting coffee, and they're just swiping on their phone. It looks like they're playing like, you know, Angry Birds or something. But I find out that they're on Tinder, looking at photos, making these quick decisions. And it looked so fast that, like I said, it was like Angry Birds, where you're just moving quickly, swiping right, swiping left, swiping right. Is this about true connections, or is this just about finding somebody you think is attractive as far as their looks?
I think it's both. I don't think it's, I wouldn't want to take a view that it's one or the other. It's complicated. And I think part of it is that people need to be mindful of the fact that the technology is creating kind of a certain sense of who a person is, and they're presenting those things to you, as well as the other user, the person creating their profile, is creating a profile. They're trying to present themselves. Lots of people don't actually know how to present themselves very well on their apps, it turns out. Maybe it's they don't have good pictures. They don't have any good pictures, they say. So they might not be doing a good job of also presenting themselves. Whereas if they met, you know, at the grocery store, they would have had a very different experience, right? I always use the grocery store because many of the people in my studies go, well, back in the day when we met in the grocery store, and I'm like, nobody really did meet in the grocery store. I mean, like, but I love that it's like a cliche about like, you know, meet in real life in the grocery store. And by the way, many people have talked about, you know, meeting by the melons, and I'm like, did you ever meet by the melons? No. So, no. You know, there's this thing where on the one hand, what the technology does do that is helpful, especially for people in small dating pools. So lots of people in the LGBTQ community, more so even than the heterosexual community, use online dating apps because you're able to find your peeps, right? You're able to know, okay, that person is gay, right? A lot of people aren't sure when they're out in the grocery store if that person really is also gay. Also for people who might be like bisexual, right? Or people who are non-monogamous. So anybody who are kind of on the outskirts of mainstream identities and sexualities, they have other obstacles to find each other. And dating apps allow them because there's a lot of niche dating apps. So maybe people who are like in the BDSM kink community, there are apps just for that community so people can find partners, you know, to play with. The history of online dating apps with the smartphone apps, the swiping apps, those really started with Grindr and Scruff and for gay men trying to find each other. And so for people in small dating pools, apps actually have, like dating apps have been a game changer. And they're a way for people to find each other safely. A lot of trans people have talked to me about like this has been a really helpful place to also kind of safely show who I am and find out who other people are before I meet in person.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a good point there. The safety aspect of this, because you get to have a longer conversation. You're not just walking up to a stranger. You're actually conversing with them prior to meeting. So perhaps this is actually safer.
The joke about online dating for a long time was, oh, you might meet an axe murderer or a serial killer. Well, you know, Ted Bundy was out there in the UW campus in Seattle finding women out on, you know,
good point.
In real life, like he wasn't on a dating app.
So yeah. Wow.
The danger part is the danger part doesn't change, but the dangers look different.
Okay.
Right. So you have to have different kind of, I'd say, digital literacies. You have to be assessing the situation differently. Like, what do you look for when you're on a dating app versus what do you look for when you see a guy at the bar who's trying to talk to you? And by the way, just, you know, we talk about it being fun to, you know, swipe. It looks like a game with online dating. There's lots of people who were out at bars who were just there, you know, playing dating games that weren't really, right? They were also like, hey, how much can I bet you I can, you know, get that girl's phone number? Like, right. That was part of the game. So there's, we can say that the digital forum isn't revolutionary. It hasn't completely change things. It's just adaptations of stuff we were already doing in physical spaces.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, going back to the country bar, yeah, you're going to look at the person first before you go up and talk to them. So I guess in a way, it's just being mirrored into these apps. But I guess the bigger question here is, what about the design and the functionality of the app? Is that contributing to, you know, more than the profile, perhaps, just the design of the app?
Well, I think there's twofold. Some apps have algorithms that like tell you what the percent is of the match. And many people in my study say they don't really put a lot of stock in it. But there's other people who have also said, I don't necessarily trust it, but I won't talk to somebody who's less than 70% compatible. Or so, you know, like they have like a threat.
Right.
So there's still this kind of sense that there may be something there that's worth looking at. And the other thing is who gets sent to you, you know, who shows up in your feed, you know, for every swipe. The algorithm is deciding that, but it's deciding it based on a couple of things. It's one is what you've put in. So if you've put in filters that say like, you know, I only want to talk to people between this age and this age who live this far and this far, and I only want to talk to same sex, or I don't want to talk to same sex, or, I mean, there's also an initial part where the design is facilitating the person's choices. And, oh, there's even, let's add this one. There's a height option, right? So Zoosk is an app that's desktop as well. And it allows you to even filter by height. So there's a lot of women who don't want to date men under 5'10" or 5'11" or 6 feet. And I hear this from a lot of men who are like, oh, woe, you know, woe is me. I'm under 5'10", and apparently half the women in the world now don't want to date me, and I'm already filtered out.
Right?
Which I've had some interesting conversations with people to say, like, well, let's look at your filter together. Like, why don't we up it 1 inch? Lower it 1 inch. Like, let's play with it just to see how many more people you get. And that practice makes them go, oh my God, like, if you think about what percentage of the male population in the U.S., for example, is over 6 feet, it's not a lot compared to the whole pool, right? You really limit yourself. So some of the issues are actually generated. They're generated by users' choices, but those choices are still predicated on the apps creating features that drive certain choices, right? There's also features about race on some of them, like where you're putting in your race and whether you're willing to date people of another race. So in many ways, it reproduces some of the same I'd say that some of the same racists kind of like, I'm not dating anybody who's not the same race as me, which some people call it preference and other people call it prejudice. And it's a pretty widely contested discussion. But for, especially for people of color, many of them have said like, the problem, one, they're not getting as many people, right, that are coming to them because they're getting filtered out. But then some of them are like, well, I don't want to talk to them anyways if they don't want to date me. So that's okay.
So if we're talking algorithmic dating, essentially, in some ways, right, we're talking about what filter settings. Well, there's also, you know, you can't control what filters that person's going to put on, right. But you can control the answers that you put within and what you say right. on your profile and what that photo looks mm-hmm. like. Why don't we talk about that? And we will do that right after a short break here. And welcome back to Learning More. I'm Russ. Thank you for listening today. We are talking with Ricky Thompson about online dating, pandemic dating. Oh, yeah. So, okay, we teased this going into the break there about the profile. Yeah, you can't control the filters that somebody's going to put on their side, but you can control what you're putting on your side and in your profile. And really, I guess that starts with the photos. Ricky, talk to us a little about the importance of photos in your dating profile.
It's definitely important to have a picture of yourself that has a clear picture of your face, unobstructed. I tell people, make sure you have a picture where you're not wearing a hat, sunglasses, ski goggles, you know, things that hide who you are. You can have maybe a picture of yourself in your ski goggles on the mountain as one of your other pictures if you're a big skier and you want, you know, you're looking for other people to go skiing with. But you don't want that to be your opening picture usually because people are like, well, I can't see your eyes. People are really looking to see your eyes. And they're also looking to see your smiles. Oh, yeah. A lot of people are very drawn to, they want to see that you're your best self. People recognize that the dating profile is not the true you, but the promise of you on your best day. It is your job interview. With that said, what people tend to be looking for is a sense of who you are in your daily life. They're trying to get a sense of how do I get to know you through this online medium. So what that means is you shouldn't have five selfies in your car because they're all the same picture, right? That doesn't give anybody a sense okay. of who you are. So maybe you have a selfie of yourself somewhere. Maybe you have a picture of yourself skiing. Maybe you have a picture of yourself drinking wine at the local winery because you're big into wine tasting. That might be what's on my profile. It's also important to show a range of pictures in terms of close-ups and some long shots because people want to see a sense of your body shape. They want to know if you're tall. They want to know if you're curvy. They want to know if you're super skinny.
Okay, well, let's look at the opposite side of this. What shouldn't they include in their photos?
Generally, the shirtless selfie in front of the mirror or at the gym is it's cliche, but I will say the only people I've seen to not really hate them, there's a number of gay men who've said like, oh, yeah, they're at the gym. I'm good with that. But straight women generally are like, they tend to not like them. They'll tell me it's like a reason to swipe no. Right? It's because the person doesn't understand the rhetorical act that they shouldn't be doing this picture. Like that there's, don't they know it's a cliche?
Right.
Similarly, the picture of a guy holding a fish, is another one that has kind of become a joke picture.
Right. Hundreds of those.
but I've also heard people say, like, if you're an avid fisherman and that's how you're spending your time, why wouldn't you have that picture, right? So it's controversial in some interesting ways because it tends to kind of signal it's – in some ways it's signaling certain kind of masculinities to certain people, but it's also, it may just be your hobby. My current partner had left, I met him on OkCupid and he had written shirtless selfies and fish porn pictures available upon request. And I just thought that was hilarious. Cause I thought, oh, he knows you're not supposed to do it. Right. Like, but we made a joke out of it. And so people, when they're able to recognize the reason to do it or not to do it, that kind of goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. So let's get into that. What about the written profile? Talk a little about that.
That's probably the trickiest part. And it depends on the kind of app you're on because you don't have a lot of room in some of them. And so in others, you have a lot of room. I think the goal for the written part of the profile is one, you want to try to say something about who you are, but also what's uniquely you. And for some people, that's really hard because I think a lot of people I've discovered haven't really reflected on who they are and what they want. They're just like, well, I got to get out there again. And they hadn't really thought it through. So taking that time to figure out like, huh, what's uniquely you and how can you invite conversation through your profile, right? Like your point about if I wear this hat, you know, that has this look, like this might bring conversation. Same kind of thing. Do you put something in your profile? Like some people like to use certain kind of things like, you know, two lies and a truth. Ask me which one is true. You know, I've been to all seven continents, you know, kind of thing. So finding ways to let people figure out how to talk to you, to move to the messaging space, and also just being really honest about who you are, being clever.
Yeah, little conversation starters.
Conversation starters. I would say being clever is good. Lots of people say they want funny and clever, but that one's actually, I think that's very nuanced and it's hard to describe. It's something I would work with someone if they wanted some consulting on their profile.
Hey, good job getting that plug in there. Yeah, I'll put a link to your website so that if somebody did want to contact you for consulting or workshops, things like that, they can do that. The link is in the description. Yeah, humor has got to be pretty darn tough on these profiles.
Sarcasm.
Oh, yeah, sarcasm. Sarcasm is just about one of the hardest things that you can do.
Well, sarcasm is really hard in a written form, right? I think that's the other part. Is that
exactly.
We're largely relying on the written form and the photos. Mm-hmm. And so I think until the next game changer where it's more video fronted, where people can, you know, include their social cues and their mannerisms, which interestingly enough, I heard of an app this morning called Snack. That's kind of a combination of TikTok dating app that it's aiming for the younger dating generation, which will allow you to really make your profile as a short video. So I think that's the next game changer. And that will allow people, I think, to show humor in ways that a lot of people struggle with in doing in this kind of form.
Yeah, no, that sounds really interesting. The other thing, though, that I guess, you know, could be a game changer, and I know a lot of the websites have this already, is like this kind of paid to play where you get on top of the feeds, we'll just call them, so that you can be showcased. So it's basically you're paying to be ahead of everybody else or to get into more people's feeds so that potentially you can get more dates. Does this cause access or inequality issues?
Yeah, I think what's interesting is the majority of people that I've talked to tend to use the free version. But there are lots of people also who are paying extra for features and where they pay for features during small windows of time for specific things. If you have the money, right? If you have the means to get premium services, then you can give yourself access to being basically pushed to the top of somebody's screen by, you know, buying more tokens, more super likes, super swipes, all these things. They give you more visibility for sure. But they don't fix the one problem, which is if you also have a really crappy profile or you didn't fill anything out, then you might show up at the top, but they might not like you. I think the other thing when we talk about, I guess, kind of who's at the top of the bin is there's no question that there is still the same thing in online dating that there is in the real world, which is the most beautiful people are still going to get put to the top. And I say that because some of the algorithms are set up in a way that are about attractiveness to attractiveness. Like, I don't even know how some of those work, but there's no question. I've read a lot of stuff that's part of the game. Add to that, I've definitely heard people in my study even say, I won't swipe yes or, you know, write on anybody who doesn't write anything on their profile. Well, unless they're really hot. So right. People are willing to make, and I've heard this from plenty of people, like, sometimes they're just hot. So the person who's attractive also is still getting, and whatever that attractive is by, you know, whatever standard and that may be, those people still also are an advantage. It's complicated, but yes, there's no question that if you have more money, you get access to certain features that will get you pushed up.
We do have to remember that Bill Gates is now single. So who knows? He may just be at the top of everybody's.
I screenshotted somebody made a Tinder app for him, and it said something entrepreneur, humanitarian, like recently out of a relationship. And then the comment under it was like, oh, great, another entrepreneur, quote, because entrepreneur is what people think others write when they're unemployed.
Well, technically, he's unemployed, but you know, he's the kind of unemployed we all want to be, just loaded and don't have to work. All right. So, Ricky, thank you so much for joining me today. You do have a book that you're working on. And once you have that complete, let us know so we can bring you back on the show and talk further about this topic. It was fascinating today to learn more about all of this. And there's also a website that I will link to, and you can do some, maybe perhaps some coaching for some of those that are listening and need some help. Ricky, thank you so much for helping us learn more about pandemic dating and online dating.
Thanks, Russ. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Next week, we will turn the topic to mRNA. Yeah, we're going to learn more about mRNA that is in those vaccines, and maybe it's in most of us now. We'll learn about the future advances of mRNA and what else it can do to help us in the future. If you enjoy learning more, we'd love to have you subscribe. We'd also love to have a review in whatever app it is that you're listening on right now. We also have a daily podcast called This Is Today, where we talk about the historical events and whatever national events are going on each day, so you can hear us every single day on This Is Today. There's a link in the description. Thank you for learning more with us today, and we will talk to you next time.